am Mindy and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm also a drug addict. My sobriety date is April 2nd of 2013, and I've been sober for 3.5 years. So what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I did not have a normal childhood. I had an alcoholic, drug addict father, and I had an alcoholic mother. And everything was okay until I was about 7. And my parents had split up, and I remember this kind of feeling came over our household. And what that feeling was the feeling of methamphetamine. And my dad and my stepmother started doing dope. And my childhood took a totally different path. My younger half-sister, her grandmother, and then my grandmother came and took us. And I went and lived with my grandmother, and she went and lived with her grandmother. And at about... hold on one second.
Will you hand me my water?
At about 9 years old, I moved in with my mom, and she was an active alcoholic. And so my childhood kind of became where I took care of myself. And, you know, I didn't really know any different. I made myself dinner. I put myself in bed. I got up. I went to school. And my life was like that till I was about 13. When I was about 13, my mom got into AA, and she got sober, and her life changed for the better. And at about 16, I got really involved in, like, marijuana, drinking, hanging out. And when I graduated high school, I chose the path of drugs and alcohol. I had no interest in school or college or even really having a job. All my friends were drug dealers. I had pounds of marijuana in my underneath my stove. And I lived like that for a long time. I waited tables, and I did drugs and drank all the time. And then when I was about... let's say 28 or so. No, I was about 26. I started doing meth. And I had went through a bad breakup. And I went through a lot of bad breakups. And I always thought that I was, like, so heartbroken and these terrible breakups. And what the reality was is that I was just hungover and messed up all the time. And... I always had the case of the poor Mindy, poor Mindy, poor Mindy, poor Mindy, until I got the energy or the money to get more drugs, to get more drugs and drink and party, and was just in that cycle. When I was about 29, I met a guy, and we're both active alcoholics, and I moved to Oklahoma City. I'm from Dallas. So him and I, that's what we did. We drank and partied, and we had a grow room in one of our bedrooms, and that's what we did. And then we got into a fight, and we caught all the trees on fire, and the house caught on fire, and the cops came, and he kicked me out and threw all my stuff out, and I came back to Dallas. And in 2011, my whole entire family had went out of town, meaning my aunts, my uncles, my mom, and they left me at my aunt's house to watch all the dogs. And so my uncle was like, you can drive your aunt's car, but don't drive my car. And I was like, okay. And so first thing I did was drive his car. And and so... I'm drunk with a bunch of cocaine in the car, and I'm in Keller, Texas, and I'm the song on the radio was the Beyonce song, to the left, you must not know about me. And I turned up the radio and was hauling ass down this road, and lights lit up behind me, and I got pulled over, and I was drug out of the car. I was pepper sprayed. I was taken to jail. The fire department showed up. They hosed me down. I was put in jail. And I would like to say that that was my turning point. That was my where I needed to change. But it really only got worse from there. Over the next 3 years, I lived with my dad in his little house in Plano, Texas. And did dope every day. And it got real dark, and it got real bad, and it got real ugly. And it got to where the friends that I did have didn't want anything to do with me. And my new friends wanted everything they could do with me. And so by this time, it's about 2012, and from the time I had gotten pulled over in Keller to 2013, I had been arrested about 8 times. I had, at this point, had felony drug charges, and I really didn't care. In March of 2013, I got pulled over again, and this time it was a pretty big deal, and I was in county for a while, and when I got out, I went on one more run. And this run was the kind of run that you're with your friend, and you decide to steal a bunch of hair from Sally's Beauty Supply. You go into another shop, you steal a prom dress. You run through Fiesta, out the back door, jump a fence, down the road, and all for the sake of fun, you know? Just being messed up. And when I didn't get caught, I thought, it's not fun anymore. Like, this has become life. This hasn't become, oh, Mindy's in trouble. Oh, you know, oh, I went to jail again. Oh, I was messed up. This was my day-to-day, and it was only getting worse. So I called Austin Recovery, and I said, I'm hooked on meth, and I need help. And when I called, I was on meth, so it was a drug. I was like, and the lady was like, we'll call you back in a couple days. And she did. And she said, we have a bed for you, and be here next Tuesday. And I was like, okay. So I called that uncle that I had his car that time, and I said, I need for you to take me down to Austin. I've got to go to treatment. And he's like, why me? You know, can't you ride a bus? And I said, I really think you're probably the only person in my life that I won't come to Mindy's senses and jump out of the car and go back to the dope house. And I remember I took like 9 pairs of shoes, some tank tops, some like comfy pants, and that was all I brought. I was had arrived, you know, and it was, you couldn't wear the tank tops. And I got here, and I had all that fake hair in my head that I had stolen. And I walked in, and I sat down. You know, they go through all your stuff, and I sat down in a chair, and I curled up in a ball. And I remember thinking, I don't want to do this. You know, there was all these women, and they were in like the little break rec room, and they were talking and this and that, and I just, man, I could barely lift my head up. And so it's April 2nd, 2013, and I was here. I was in treatment. I came to Austin Recovery to stop doing dope. I had no interest in quitting drinking. I had no interest in recognizing I was an alcoholic. I had no interest in saying I was an alcoholic. All I wanted to do was not be able to stick stuff up my nose and do drugs. And I still had this thought and this theory that one day I was going to go to Napa Valley and drink wine and, you know, champagne toast. And it was like, I didn't even have a bicycle. I don't know how I was going to get to Napa Valley. Had a bunch of flip-flops. It was, my delusion was so thick of the woman that I really was and the woman I thought I was. And I remember I was in treatment for about 3 days. I kind of had finally woke up. I slept for like those first 2 days or whatever. And my counselor talked to me and she said, and I was still very defiant and really just wanted to detox off meth and go back to my old ways. And she said, you know, what's up? Tell me about you. And I told her. She said, Mindy, I'm here to advocate for you. And nobody in my whole entire life had ever said that they were here to advocate for me. I really didn't know what the word meant, but I knew that it was a positive, good thing. And so I remember we were at another location at the North Campus, and going in the gymnasium and the meeting on Wednesday night that you go to. And I remember the alumni's coming in and talking about getting sober. And it started to click. I started hearing people talk about how they couldn't put the drink or the drug down. And I started to realize that I could never put the drink or the drug down. I drank and 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 I did dope 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 and I did it until it was gone and then until I could get some more. And so when they would say, normies, this, I was like, I thought I was a normie. I thought everybody really partied like I partied. And so I remember all the women in Family House with the kids. And I remember making friends in treatment and saying, when we get out, we'll go to a meeting. You know, I remember how good the guys looked. And it's true, you get sober, people start looking really good, you know? It's like, wow. So it was time for me to leave Austin Recovery, and I knew that I wanted to stay sober. And my mom came and picked me up, and I'm a big crybaby, so I'll cry the whole time, but it's not because I'm sad. My mom came and picked me up, and I said, I want to stay clean. I don't want to go back to who I was. I don't want to go back to that misery. And I remember we were driving on 35 from Austin to Dallas. And I could see colors, and I could see nature, and I could see lights and the sun. And I could see that life was way bigger than what I ever really knew it was. So I had to go back to my dad's house where I used and where my chaos lived. And I got me one of those coloring books and some gel pens. And I went to the doctor, and I went to the doctor, and I told the doctor what was going on with me and that I needed something to help me, you know, maintain. And the doctor gave me I think it was doxepin, I think. And I colored for 2 weeks straight in my room with my gel pens. Thank you so much. With my gel pens and my book. And I know now, because now those books are everywhere, and it's like the biggest like killer of anxiety, and how much it helps. And I started to get busy living. I decided I was going to move back to Austin, and I found a little sublease over in West Campus, and me and my little dog, and all the clothes I had stolen were on our way to Austin. And my mom brought me down here, and she dropped me off, and I, you know, once again, I had arrived. I called my friend Jen, and Jen and I were in treatment together. And I said, I'm here. Let's hang out. So she came and picked me up, and we hit the meetings. I went to AA, NA, CMA, CA, OA, because I had a whole bubble of stuff going on with me. And and we went to Western Trails, we went to Bridge to Shore, we went to the AR Freedom of Fears, and got really involved in alumni. And I had to find a sponsor. And so I had probably been here like maybe a week or two. And this time it's come like about May 10th or so of 2013. And I didn't like women, and I didn't need to be around men. And I ended up at a clubhouse called Galano. And at Galano, there was two guys chairing an AA meeting. And one really caught my attention. And I thought, that's who I want to be my sponsor. I'm like, well, the guys aren't supposed to sponsor girls, you know. Luckily, he was a gay guy, and he did not like girls. And he agreed to be my sponsor. And so I'm living in Little West U, and I'm catching the bus, and I'm going to meetings. And I would catch the bus all the way to Western Trails for the 1:30. And I'd come all the way back to go to the 5:30 at We Are Not Saints. And then I'd catch the bus again, and I'd go to the 8 o'clock at Galano. And that's what I did. And I cried in every meeting. And most people did not know what I was saying, because I was still kind of, you know, just, I was broken. I was broken. And then I started making friends. I started going to alumni with Austin Recovery, and I started listening to Kevin, and I started listening to Lori, and I made friends with Dennis. And I flirted. And then Dennis told me that his home group was CMA. And I was like, what, you know, I'm going to go. I'm a crystal meth addict. And CMA, that became my home group. And I was the only female. Was the only straight female. With a group of people who we had a lot of things in common. And that group loved me until I could love myself. So what started to happen was those 12 steps. I went to the AR barbecue. I went to the lake. You know, batted my eyes at a guy. Hung out with him for a little bit. And it was kind of like I felt like I was like 17 again. You know, I had some freedom. I wasn't in the pain, and I wasn't drinking 14 shots of Tuaca, 2 glasses of wine, 7 beers, and chasing it all with methamphetamine. That was not my MO anymore. When it comes to step one, I had to look at the unmanageability and what I really was managing. The life I had been managing was no life at all. It was a prison of drugs and alcohol. And when it came to step two, about believing a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity, I didn't know what my sanity was. Because in a sense, my sanity was taken when I was 7 years old and I saw my parents shooting up. So, I'm starting to make friends. I've got some friends. We go eat, we hang out. And one day, I think I was probably like, maybe 3 months sober. Dennis and I are running around, and we see this crystal store along 35. Like, let's go to that crystal store. I don't know anything about crystals. You know, like, so we go in, and we're strolling around. He goes, do you see anything you like? And I was like, no, not yet. I said, you see anything you like? No, not yet. And then there was this big glass case, and I walked up to it, and I was like, ooh, Dennis, come over here and look at this. Look, I like this. And at the same time, Dennis and I looked down at this case. We looked at each other and realized it looked like a whole case of methamphetamine. I said, we got to go. We both hauled our asses out of that rock store so fast. And my point there is, when you get out of here and you're early in sobriety and you're kind of figuring it all out the best to your ability, and the universe or God shows you something, recognize it. Had Dennis and I been standing in that rock store for 15 minutes longer, what goes on in here could have had me doing meth real quick. Those 3 years that I was talking about, between being hosed down by the fire department and being in Austin recovery, I spent a lot of time with my stepsister, and her name was Jessica. And me, Jessica, and Mary, I drank Natural Light, Jessica drank Busch, and Mary drank Schlitz. And we would sit out on Jessica's front porch, and we would drink from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. every Monday and every Friday. And Monday, because once I was wasted enough, I went on my meth binge. And I would come back around on Friday, like clockwork, every week. That's what I did. And that's what they did. And that's what we did. And so when I was about 45 days sober, I got a phone call that Jessica had killed herself. And when I went to call Mary to tell Mary that Jessica had killed herself, well, Mary had died while I was in treatment. So I'm standing there as a survivor of these three women. And I know now in that moment that I could have turned to the point of survivor's remorse. And when you stay sober and people start dying, because they'll start dying, survivor's remorse will kick in. And you have to be ready to go to the turning point of recovery and not survivor's remorse. So Jessica had passed. Mary had passed. Some other two girls that I ran with. One was locked up, and the other one was so cuckoo she wouldn't come out of her attic. And I'm sober in Austin, doing the deal. I'm recovering. When I was about 6 months sober, I was working a service commitment at the Galano Club, the little coffee bar, and it was on a Sunday. And I got a call from my new best friend, Jen, that I had met in treatment. That her daughter was in intensive care from the direct effects of a heroin overdose. And I had to be present. I had to be present for my friend who was about to go through some serious shit. And I'm about 5 months sober, and I'm down in some hospital off Benny White. I don't know what the hospital was. And I'm watching her 17-year-old daughter cling for life. And once again, here came survivor's remorse. And that young lady passed away. She died. My new best friend's daughter had died. So, these steps, become very, very serious. And that in an instant, I could go back out and lose my fucking life. And I would listen to Kevin say, "You can't go back to the dope house and get people sober." And I would watch Lori knit her scarves. And I saw these sober people and how they had a piece of serenity that I didn't know anything about. made a decision to turn our will and lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. It's very easy to say and say the prayer and read about it and write about it and think about it. But if you don't know what care is and you've never been cared for and the only care you know is, "I love you, but I can't be with you." You know? "I care about you, but I just can't," you know? So to think that that power that was going to return me to sanity is now going to care about me, it gets pretty deep. But I did it. And so, step four, boy, I got me a notebook and I got after it. And I wrote down about everything that everybody had ever done to me. Those bitches that stole my clothes. How my mama did not tell me I needed an education. How that time I went to my dad's and he was in the doghouse, literally inside the doghouse. And all this stuff that all these people had done to me. And when I sat down for the fifth step and I told my sponsor, we went over it. And it was like he took a magic wand and showed me my part. And my part was so much more than I ever knew. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these characters, defects of character. Well, yeah, I was ready. Yeah, I don't want, And I visit that step often. I'll be sitting in a meeting and just look up at step six and go, "I am entirely ready to not be a bitch anymore." Because your character defects still come back. They're a part of you. You have to recognize them when they come up. I did not know what it meant to be humble. I looked it up in the dictionary. Well, I Googled it, but I tried to read about it in the 12 and 12, and I had no idea what it meant to be humble at all. But I knew that St. Francis prayer was some pretty deep stuff, and the dark and the light and this and that. It's like, man, if I can do that, I can do anything. So step 8. I wrote my list down, and I talked to my sponsor about it. And it was time for me to move on to step 9. I had stolen so much stuff in my life, and I had screwed over so many people that there was no way in this world that I was going to go back to the establishments that I had robbed and said, here's your $2,000 back. You know, like, that was not going to happen. So me and my sponsor got together and figured out a sum of money. And to this day, I donate $20 a month to the charity of my choice, so I can put that money back into the universe and stop taking and taking and taking. I still give back. And right now, it's a little doggy foster place, and they get 20 of my dollars every month. So when I used to be really high or drunk or hungover, and the birds would start chirping in the morning, long time ago, I thought about killing them, okay? And I thought, I'm gonna go get me a BB gun, and when these birds start chirping, I'm gonna shoot them. And then there was other times that I thought they were the FBI, so I was really gonna shoot them. Some people know what I'm talking about. When those birds start going and you're like, oh my God, the birds. And I remember I was about 9 or 10 months sober. And at this point, I had a vehicle and I had another little efficiency. And I was laying on my bed and I heard the birds. And I was like, and I got up. And I drove my car that I had now to Dollar General, and I bought a bird feeder, and I bought bird seed, and I put it up in the tree, and I fed those little birds every day until I left Austin. I have one at my house now in Florida. Continuing to take personal inventory and admitting it when we were wrong. So I was at a CMA white elephant party, and I had opened my friend's gift. And man, I thought I had just done him so wrong. You know, like, man, I didn't mean to open your gift. And I called him, and I was like, James, I'm so sorry I opened your gift. And he was like, girl, I didn't even think about it. And it was like, that was my 10. That was me continuously recognizing in the present what I do and what I do wrong, and saying, hey, I recognize I probably shouldn't do that. That's for me. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with a God as we understand him, praying only for the knowledge of his will and the power to carry that out. I got really into the meditation. I was like, oh. I would come to Guy's thing, you know, before this. I would listen to Tibetan sounds on my headphones. But one thing, when I was early in sobriety, I didn't think God could hear me. I would pray, and I would be like, I don't think he heard me. And after so many days of thinking God's not hearing me, I said, well, I'll write it down. So every morning, I wrote my prayers down to God, and every page starts with, God. And then I pray for 5 people. Sometimes it's people I know. Sometimes it's people way from my past. Sometimes I just pray for the name that comes to my head. Because had someone not prayed for me, I don't know if I'd be standing here today. Amen. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and practice these principles in all of our affairs. Angela, who introduced me, I had the honor to take her through the steps. And when I came to Austin last year, the same weekend, and visited, she said to me, I want to thank you for being a part of my spiritual awakening. And I thought, oh, that was deep. And that right there was proof in my step 12. Today I'm an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I live in Tampa, Florida. I was a GSR of my home group. I'm now in a position as a DSM. That guy that I had all the marijuana with in the room out back in Oklahoma that I was singing the Beyonce song about, he got sober too. He went to treatment. He moved to Florida. We did not talk that first year. We were not together that first year. After I picked up my ear chip, we got in a monogamous committed relationship. And we were married in May 21st. And we have a wonderful life. He owns a vape shop. It's our livelihood. I work for a real estate company. It's not easy staying sober. It's not easy being vulnerable. It's not easy letting people love you when it's not easy loving other people. But if you do it just one day at a time, it gets so much better. It gets so much better. And I remember once I posted on Facebook, I was feeling better. Like I picked the better and I picked the happy emoji. And boy, did people like that I was better. You know? You can't fix yourself. And God can. And maybe you're not at a place of understanding God yet. And maybe you're not willing to understand God yet. But recognize that you're not God. I have lots of other funny stories about some things that went on. Because it's been fun. Recovery has been very, very fun. And I don't know why my higher power and my husband's higher power moved us to Florida. I'm a Texas girl. And it's so I can heal. I'm still healing from the pain that I put myself through. I have a sponsor in Florida. My home group is a women's group. It is a major progress that I chose a women's group to be my home group. And she said, well, why did you ask me to be your sponsor? And I said, well, because you're so girly. And she was like, is it because I look like a drag queen? Maybe. I come every year. I was here last year. I go to a drag show that all my friends are in. You know? Dragoween. They're all very happy to see me. I'm very happy to see them. We're all sober. We go to dinner Friday night. I did not like people. I did not like women. And all I did was screw over men. And now I have love for just human, you know, for just humans, for mankind. And, you know, it's such a blessing that 20 of us went to dinner Friday night when I got here. 20 people who loved me and loved me until I could love myself. My first year, like I said, I was very active in the Austin Recovery Alumni. And it was a vital part of my being a newcomer. You can go back. You can go back out there and you can drink and you can party and you can deal drugs and you can do whatever you want to do. It gets worse. It gets worse. You'll go to jail. You'll die. If I leave here tonight, when I drive back to Dallas and I run over something, or I get hit by another car hits me, or I hit another car, everyone I know will be at peace that substance had nothing to do with it. I was driving once, and I had been up all night drinking and up all night on cocaine, and it was about 10 a.m. And I'm in my little car, and it had no windows because they had been broken out. And I'm driving down Greenville Avenue in Dallas, and it's like 10 a.m. on a Sunday. And I almost took out a group of bikers. And I'm getting over in the left lane to go to Dollar General because it's the only store I shop at. And I almost ran over this manila-colored man on a manila-colored scooter with a manila-colored background. And it still scares me to this day that I almost killed that guy. He blended in, but I almost killed him. But if the same scenario happened tonight or tomorrow, it wouldn't be because I was all screwed up. It would be because he blended in and I didn't see him. I tell my story pretty fast. I told it last week in Florida, and I was done in like 12 minutes, and it was like, I don't know what to do now.
Tell them about the first trip to alumni reunion.
Okay. So, we go to the alumni barbecue, and I was about maybe 60, 70 days sober, and I hitch a ride with Dennis. And he's in this wild BMW, right?
'89 BMW.
No, the one before this one he has. So he's got another guy with him who is approximately maybe 350. And I'm babysitting another girl that was in one of the moms, family house mom. And she, I babysat her kid for whatever reason. So it's, Dennis is driving. 6'2" Jason is in the front seat. No, wow. The big guy is in the front seat. Jason's back here. I'm in the middle and a baby in a car seat next to us. And we are flying down 35 to get to this barbecue out at Family Hicks Ranch, where y'all all are. And the funny part is that, is if you would have been driving next to us, you'd be like, what in the fuck are these people doing? Well, we're on our way to a sober barbecue, you know? Like, da-da-da-da. My life is beautiful. It really is. I wish y'all could have seen me when I walked in here and how terrible I was. I remember thinking in the big book, my favorite line is, we are not saints. And it's because I'm no saint by any means. And I remember going to meetings and going, man, these people sure, you know, they sure are happy. And like everybody says, you know, they tell their little story, ha, 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 stay sober, you know, and I'm like, uh-uh. But I heard that lady say, we are not saints, not thought, thank God. And I forgot where I was going with that. My drugs and alcohol had direct effects on people. Direct. I got addicted to game rooms when I was on dope. And when I got to Austin, I was like, I wonder if there's any game rooms. You know, I'm sober. I like $12. Like, maybe I can find one. And I never found one. But I'm getting ready to move out of Austin, and I'm watching the news, and I see them do a thing on game rooms, and I was like, where is that? It was right where I've been doing laundry the whole time. It was right next door. I was like, the whole time there was one right next door? Thank you, God. Thank you, God, that I never knew that was a game room. So, I had a child. I used the whole pregnancy. And I spent all the money that I got from the adoption and game rooms. And when I had the baby, I manipulated the whole scene. Me and my other three messed up friends come flying through the emergency room in Allen, Texas. And I had a baby. I had no doctor, but I had a family who wanted that baby that were in California. And I called them and I said, I'm having a baby. And they came. And I was in the hospital. And I took all the stuff out of my arms. And I had my friends come pick me up. And I left the hospital. And we went to a game room. And I went back to the hospital. And I had the nurse put the stuff back in. I was messed up. What was going on in here, the decisions I made when I was on alcohol and drugs were messed up. The child today is now 4. He's healthy. He has 2 parents who love him. And his birth mother is sober. And like I said about the family house, you know, when I was in AR, and I was like, well, I didn't know there was going to be kids here. I'm trying to get over the fact I had one. You start to get empathy and compassion and feelings and love. What time am I up? So I want to see you all here next year when I come for Dragoween and pick up your marbles. Aww. It's not that hard to stay sober. It's harder being fucked up. Thank you. Thank you.